That was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Donald Trump has officially withdrawn the U.S. from the 12-nation Pacific Rim Free Trade Agreement, calling it a great thing for the American worker. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, was signed by the Obama administration, but never ratified by Congress. White House spokesman Sean Spicer defended the action.
When you enter into these multinational agreements, you're allowing any country, no matter the size, any one of those 12, including us, to basically have the same stature as the United States in the agreement. So we're basically on par with some very small companies who are getting access to an amazing market, the United States, and in return, we're negotiating at the lowest common denominator.
He said bilateral trade agreements will be more beneficial to the U.S. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said he hopes to revive the concept of TPP with the other member states and possibly even China.
We want to have more opportunities with more markets. We already have a China-Australia Free Trade Agreement. Certainly, there is the potential for China to join the TPP.
Meanwhile, Mexico's president said he hopes to negotiate bilateral trade deals with the U.S. and Canada, given Mr. Trump's criticism of the 22-year-old North American Free Trade Pact, known as NAFTA, which he wants to renegotiate or withdraw from. Gambian President Adama Barrow Monday announced his vice president, Fatoumata Tambajong, a former U.N. employee who was instrumental in organizing the opposition, against longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh. Mr. Barr remains in Senegal, where he was sworn in last week, and his return remains uncertain, although a spokesman indicated it could be Tuesday. Jammeh, who refused to accept election defeat back in December, left the country late Saturday and is reportedly in Equatorial Guinea. Mr. Barrow accused him of taking millions from the treasury before departing. This is VOA News. Syrian ceasefire talks sponsored by Russia, Turkey, and Iran are scheduled to continue Tuesday in the Kazakh capital, Astana, after a first day of indirect negotiations between the government and opposition failed to reach agreement. The negotiations are focusing on cementing a nationwide ceasefire, a truce that is largely held, although rebel representative Issam El Rice accused the government of repeated violations.
We are still watching the regime for violating the ceasefire and making more massacres and more crimes. And until now, there is no ceasefire on the ground. We are here to see a ceasefire, unless there's no need to talk or to go further for a political transition or whatever.
A joint communique being drafted reportedly would commit Russia, Turkey, and Iran to fight Islamic State and Jabhat Fateh al-Sham, formerly Nusra Front. They would also set up a mechanism to monitor compliance with the ceasefire. Forces allied with Yemen's government of President Abdrabo Mansur Hadi Monday fought their way into the Red Sea coastal city of al-Mocha, pushing out Shia Houthi rebels. The capture is seen as depriving the rebels of a weapons lifeline and appears to be part of a strategy by the Saudi-backed forces of securing the western coastline of Yemen, cutting the Houthis off from the outside. The U.S. Senate late Monday confirmed the nomination of Congressman Mike Pompeo as the next director of Central Intelligence. He was sworn in shortly afterward by Vice President Mike Pence, who lauded the work of the intelligence community.
They have the admiration of the President of the United States and the gratitude of the American people, and I know they will be greatly benefited by the wealth of experience and character that you will bring to this leadership role.
Pompeo, the third cabinet official of President Donald Trump to be confirmed by the Senate, Defense Secretary James Mattis and Homeland Security Secretary Jack Kelly were given the green light Friday. Meanwhile, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee narrowly voted to confirm ExxonMobil Chief Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. The vote 11-4, 10 against. The nomination now goes to the full Senate. Doctors Monday said the health of former U.S. President George H.W. Bush, suffering from bacterial pneumonia, is improving in that he has been moved out of the intensive care unit at a Houston hospital. The U.N. Security Council stepped up its demand for a halt in the fighting in South Sudan, including deployment of an African regional force to buttress the 12,000 U.N. peacekeepers already there. The council has expressed deep concern fighting continues and that there are denials of humanitarian access to many regions of the country. Former world number one golfer Tiger Woods, plagued by injury for months, announced Monday his return to professional golfing with an appearance later this month at the Farmers Insurance Open in California. He has committed to other tournaments, including February's Desert Classic Dubai. The 41-year-old Woods has not played an official money event in 18 months. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambian president chooses a woman vice president.
Acting under the provisions of the Constitution, the president of the Gambia, Adama Barrow, appointed veteran Gambian politician and former UN diplomat in the person of Madame Fatoumata Tambadja.
That's VOA's Spring of Sydney Mariner in Senegal's capital, Dakar. Meanwhile, in part two of our exclusive interview with President Barrow, he says he will maintain an open-door policy to attract foreign investors. A mind-body wellness helps trauma survivors in Somalia, and food aid cutbacks provoke anguish in the Central African Republic.
The children eat from the gardens, but once that's finished, it will be difficult to get food, and I'm worried my kids will become malnourished.
The voice of a Bambari woman through an interpreter will feature a little new aspect of Cape Verdean music, and at the African Cup of Nations tournament, Christian preachers hope to use the excitement of the game to send a message about peace. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gambian President Adama Barrow has chosen a woman as his vice president. VOA String of Sydney Mariner in the Senegalese capital, Dakar, says Fatoumata Diallo Tambadja is a veteran politician and diplomat who played a key role in bringing the coalition together that finally defeated longtime leader Yahya Jammeh.
Acting under the provisions of the Constitution, the president of the Gambia, Adama Barrow, appointed veteran Gambian politician and former UN diplomat in the person of Madame Fatoumata Tambadja. Madame Tambadja is a very, very well-known figure in the liberation struggle, I would say, against Yahya Jammeh 22 years government. Previously, she served under President Jammeh as a minister from 1994, immediately Jammeh came to power, to 1995. According to people who knew Fatoumata Tambadja, she got this agreement with Jammeh, so she was fired from his post, and then she went back to the United Nations, where she has worked with them at the Liberia office under the United Nations Program for Africa. So Fatoumata Tambadja, she holds a bachelor degree in fine arts. She speaks both fluent English and French, graduated from University of Nice. She leads a pro-democracy movement that was calling for all the political parties to come together, avoid their difference, and then pick up a candidate to challenge Yahya Jammeh. She spearheaded that movement, and they won the coalition. So basically, according to many Gambians, she's a woman of excellence whom they think will have an impact in the new Gambia. But there have been reactions to her appointment. Some claim that her appointment is unconstitutional because, according to the Constitution of the Gambia, Section 70, a vice president must not be above age of 65. And Fatoumata, according to what is being said in local media, she is 67.
Sydney, former President Yahya Jammeh also had a woman vice president. Is that correct?
Yes. That's correct. And Fatoumata Tambadja becomes the second female vice president in the Gambia since we got our independence from the British in 1965.
Any indication when President Adama Barrow will be returning to Gambia?
When I spoke with him in an interview over the weekend, he told me that he will be returning to the Gambia anytime soon without telling me how and when. And he told CNN also in a brief interview that he will return within a week. He is waiting for some security clearance from the Economic Community of West African States, which is ECOWAS. Currently, we have ECOMOC soldiers in the Gambia. They take over the state house where they believe Jammeh loyalists hidden some heavy weapons. So they're trying to sanitize the entire presidency and try to neutralize any potential security threat or remaining puppets of President Jammeh. So currently, he is staying in Dakar because of safety and security reasons. And news emerged that Jammeh has put certain chemicals at the state house in Banjul
I know that in your interview with President Adama Barrow, he indicated he will set up a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. But also, do we know now what his government is saying about the news that former President Yahya Jammeh looted the Gambian treasury to the tune of almost $11 million?
Yes, the new government regrets the information that the former president looted a lot of resources, including cars, while he was leaving the country. So they said they are still waiting on the technocrats at the central bank and the Ministry of Finance to audit and evaluate actually what happened before they will jump into conclusion. But his special advisor told the press in Dakar late Sunday that, you know, Jammeh has emptied the state coffers and President Barrow is doing everything to recover those stolen assets from the former president. So this is something that the new presidency said they regretted it and they will do everything in their power to recover these stolen properties. When and how was not immediately clear.
In the meantime, Senegal was host to many Gambians who fled the country because of the situation in the country. What do you know now about those Gambians? Have they started to go back home?
Yes, I spoke with a local committee. These are Gambian volunteers. According to the coordinator of this local charity supporting the Gambian refugees at the border, at least 75% of them, let's say 30,000, have returned home thanks to the directive issued by President Barrow through his advisor to work with international aid agencies, including the Red Cross and the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. 66 buses from the Gambia were at the border to collect these refugees to their respective destinations within the country.
That's Vio Stranger, Sydney Mariner, speaking with us from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. President Adama Barrow says Gambia, normally referred to as the Smiling Coast, is once again open for business. Mr. Barrow says he will promote good governance and the rule of law to encourage private investment, which he hopes will eventually lead to the creation of jobs and development for his country. In part two of his exclusive interview with VOA Stranger Sydney Mariner, President Barrow says Gambia will be friendly with all countries because the country cannot afford to be isolated again.
When I swear on Thursday, I was congratulated by a lot of ambassadors. My message to them was Gambia is back, and Gambia is back in the world again. We respect all international protocol organization, and we want Gambia to be friendly to everybody in the world. We cannot afford to be isolated.
Gambia is known as the Smiling Coast, and a lot of investors really want to come to invest in your country. What do you have to tell prospect investors who are willing to come and invest in the Gambia?
What we are going to tell them is the door is open. Gambia is back and investment. People cannot invest if the environment is not there. The environment is security, good governance, rule of law. These are the things that can encourage businessmen and that will be first class in the Gambia. We will respect that. We will make sure people are secured so that they can invest. With that investment, we can create jobs. Investment, we can develop this country. So this is a very, very fundamental area. It will be key in my government. As a businessman myself, that's the way I think. But I always advise people, don't depend on buying and selling only. Let's go into production. If you buy and sell, you become a liability. If you produce, you can compete in the market and create jobs. So this is the way I think.
Gambian diaspora and the youths play a crucial role in your election victory. They are expecting a lot from you. What role do you think they should play in your government?
They played a very important role. I congratulate them and we appreciate every bit of it. It is our Gambia. We want everybody back. In any area that anybody can contribute, we are willing to help. And we'll be very, very positive. That's why we have this think tank. We have a lot of intellectuals. We want everybody to come and join this government so that we can move the country forward. If we are united, we are strong. And it's one Gambia, one people, one nation. This is our slogan. So everybody is welcome.
Your Excellency, finally, when you were sworn in Dakar, it received reaction from Gambians. Some said, we voted you into office. Why will you allow to be sworn in Senegal? What do you have to tell those Gambians, those who are questioning why you are sworn in Senegal?
It's circumstances. Circumstances beyond any Gambian's control. The role of diplomacy was there. And we wanted to give peace a chance. But today, I think everybody is smiling again.
Mm. How many ministers do you intend to have in your cabinet?
As of now, we maintain the same. I think it's about 18, as of now. We maintain the 18 until such a time that we can think and make changes. These things have to go to parliament and all sort of. But we maintain what is there. It's 18. We maintain 18.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency.
Thank you.
That's Gambian President Adama Barrow speaking in an exclusive interview with VOA String of Sydney Mariner in the Senegalese capital, Dakar. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 24th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The past year has seen the World Food Program make drastic cuts to food rations for people in need across Africa as crises around the globe compete for donor money. In the Central African Republic, 2 million people, half of the population, need food aid. But the WFP says it is unable to assist less than a third of them. Zach Badwolf reports from the city of Bambari.
The World Food Program distributes monthly rations to hundreds of thousands of displaced families in the Central African Republic. In Bambari alone, the WFP feeds more than 100,000 people. Mayor Mathieu Bataban says most are seeking safety from fighting between armed groups.
These people left their villages. They abandoned everything. They abandoned their manioc fields. They abandoned the maize fields that allowed them to survive. Because they are far from their fields, they have no revenue. This creates a real problem for food.
Virginie Kada brought her 8 children here last April after her husband was killed.
The children eat from the gardens, but once that's finished, it will be difficult to get food, and I'm worried my kids will become malnourished.
Due to funding shortfalls, the WFP has been forced to cut rations here by 75%.
Nothing to eat. Here, when they come to distribute, it's terribly insufficient. It is terribly insufficient. I have 5 children and 5 orphans and my mother. I suffer a lot.
24-year-old Umiard Mbiambanga goes into the bush to collect wood to sell in the market. He uses the money to supplement their rations, but it's dangerous work. Armed groups still roam the area.
Because of the security problems, where can we search for work? It's not safe, so we can't walk. We can't go find work anywhere. We are always here.
And it's a vicious cycle that the CAR has been trapped in for years. Camp leaders worry that lack of food and jobs may only push more men to join armed groups as a way to survive. The CAR government is appealing to large donors, including the United States and the European Union, to step in with funding so food rations can be increased. Zach Badworth for VOA News, Bambari, in the Central African Republic.
In Somalia, an exercise program for survival of sexual violence is helping participants overcome trauma. Jason Pantinki has the story for VOA from Mogadishu.
It's a trendy exercise program in an unlikely place. In classes across the Somali capital, Mogadishu, youth practice breathing, meditation, and stretching. Dressed in matching blue tracksuits, the color of the Somali flag, they hold difficult poses. Breaking into sweat, they reach to the ceiling, stretch their arms to their toes, and balance carefully on one foot as an instructor calls out directions.
Mountain pose. Neck calm, neck deep. Breathe in, breathe out.
But it's not just for fun. This mind-body wellness program, as it's called here, is for survivors of sexual violence and other trauma to help them in their counseling. Organizers asked VOA not to reveal names of participants and instructors for security reasons. One participant, who survived sexual assault, says the physical activity and mental concentration has helped her regain a sense of normalcy. She says that initially she had anxiety but is better now. She says the program has helped her reduce anxiety and that when the memory of what happened to her returns, she does the exercises to help her forget. Besides survivors of sexual violence, there are former child soldiers and other youth suffering from trauma or at risk of recruitment into armed groups. Somalia has seen decades of war and lawlessness. For survivors of physical attack, the mind-body wellness complements traditional counseling techniques, which usually only focus on psychology. Instructors empower the students with messages urging them to take control of their breath and bodies.
My breath is my most powerful tool. I am worth the effort.
One instructor, a case manager for sexual assault survivors, says even 15 minutes of meditation and stretching per day can help a survivor. The Mind-Body Wellness Program began last year with 12 Somali instructors trained by the Africa Yoga Project, a Nairobi-based nonprofit group. Some 300 people participate in the Mind-Body Wellness classes each week. Khalsan Ahmed, a protection officer for the UN Children's Fund, which funds the program, says there aren't enough services for survivors of sexual violence in Somalia, including access to justice or basic health care.
The response services are getting increased day after day, but the prevention activities and the overall system building needs to be done because we can provide a response as much as we can.
Healing trauma is not the same as preventing it, but at least it's a start. Jason Patinkin for VOA News in Mogadishu.
Cape Verde might be known for world-renowned musicians such as the Sierra Ivora, but immigrants from the West African island nation to Europe in the 70s and the 80s used their new access to synthesizers to explore and even pioneer new forms of electronic music. Vic Sohone, founder of Ostinato Records, has put together a new compilation about this little-known but influential aspect of Cape Verdean music. Sohone tells Ricky Stryer he hopes the record will also spark more reflection and conversations about the cultural contributions of immigrants to their new countries.
So when I came across this music, a few years ago, about 5 years ago, this whole other scene of Cape Verdean music that no one's really, gotten to the depths of, the experimentation and the amount it reminded me of the electronic music that I loved when I was, 14, 15 years old in high school, first started collecting records, DJing. That music, it resonated so much with me because it reminded me of that music. And I thought, how is this music being made almost a decade beforehand? And the inspiration for that was there was this incredible story to tell of migration, of movement. And I thought it was a very timely story to tell, given what's happening today in Europe with all the issues of migration, with what's happening on the borders of Greece. As Europe debates the merits of migration, I look back at this story and I thought, well, we tend to look at immigration from a very, scientific business standpoint. What are immigrants contributing? But if you actually look at what immigrants can contribute culturally, there are these incredible stories to tell.
Migration is often measured in data, in statistics, but not looked at from this cultural, more subjective standpoint of what does it contribute from the musical standpoint alone. How did this migration, specifically, I think in Rome, you said, how did it contribute to the local music scene?
During the day, they had their day jobs as immigrants, but at night they would get together and they would play, and they would play their traditional Cape Verdean music. But being in Europe, they were exposed to a whole host of electronic instrumentation that at the time was being built and being used on a small level, across Europe at this time, the synthesizer being a very important one. And they were able to transplant their melodies, their rhythm, their harmonies onto these synthesizers and really create an entirely new style of music using their traditional rhythms, their funana rhythms especially. But they were able to create this electronic sound that literally was for the community itself in the beginning. In Lisbon, for example, a very big Cape Verdean community, they had their own nightclubs, they had their own places where they gathered, same thing in Rome, whatnot. And they started playing this synthesizer-filled music. These musicians were creating music that the Cape Verdean community loved, and what the musicians told me was they wanted to give Cape Verdeans something, the Cape Verdean community, something they didn't have before, something they couldn't have because they were so cut off from the world because of colonialism and the hardships after colonialism. Eventually, the music started spreading not only to the Cape Verdean communities, but you had, local Italians coming to the Cape Verdean clubs in Rome and in Napoli.
Is the compilation released yet? What do you plan to do with the compilation? Will there be, you know, any events?
The album is not yet out. It comes out in February 24th. So I hope when it is out and more people hear it and read the liner notes and understand that this was something that was created by migration, created by a large movement of peoples into Europe's cities, which is happening as we speak today, just from a different part of the world. You know, I hope it gives people the idea that we need to look at what immigration will do culturally, what it will do musically, what it will do artistically.
That was Vic Sohano, founder of Ostinato Records. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Bangkok. Christian preachers in Africa have been converging on Gabon, hoping to capitalize on the excitement surrounding the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations tournament and sent out a message for peace. Moki Edwin Kizeka has the story from Libreville.
100 singers from 7 Pentecostal churches lead people to dance at Boulevard Triomphal in Libreville. This has become a regular event on the evenings of the Group A matches that are happening nearby. Pastor Imohi Peter is from Nigeria, one of the several clerics from revivalist churches around the region who have come to Gabon for the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament.
We are living in a world of chaos, a world of confusion that needs Jesus. So what we do as a church is to pray. I say, Lord, bring peace to these various areas where there is no peace.
He preaches by the giant screens installed near the Boulevard Triomphal. After the matches, Peter and his church members counsel new converts and direct them to sister churches in the countries where they will return when the tournament ends. Cameroonian evangelist preacher Mbella David says he is seeing about 5 new converts a day.
We allow God to rest us to praise Him. Then praise God where it don't show praise the Lord.
Mbella David is preaching on a bus transporting football fans to the stadium in Libreville. Passengers listen and some even ask questions, but not everyone approves.
Prêcher c'est bien, mais il faut savoir où le faire et quand le faire. Prêcher par-ci par-là c'est le désordre.
Oma Bongo University of Libreville student Lidwin Kemke says preaching is a very good thing, but people should know when and where to do it. She says shouting and praying in buses creates total disorder. The Christian preachers are part of an effort called the AFCON Peace Campaign, an effort for religious tolerance and an end to conflict. Kenyan-born Reverend Kamu Stanislaus is the main organizer.
It's very difficult to measure peace. Sometimes you work very hard and there are peace here and peace over there. But then when violence erupts, people remember the violence and forget the time of peace. To work for peace is more difficult than to stimulate violence.
The sidelines of an international football tournament may seem to be an unlikely place for religion, but the pastors gathered here say AFCON is a crossroads. The event draws fans from around the continent. So what better place to get the word out? Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Libreville.
And that's it for this Tuesday, January 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.